Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The risk of additional plant closings is a threat to the market, with negative packer margins expected to continue. Stabilizing and rebuilding the industry with a contracting infrastructure becomes a mega challenge.
Don Close is senior protein analyst with Terrain. On Thursday afternoon, Tyson Foods announced they're shrinking their beef processing network as historically tight cattle supplies continue pressuring packer margins. Company is closing beef operations at Joslin, Illinois, and its Eagle Mountain, Utah case ready plant, and they're pursuing a sale at their Pasco, Washington beef facility. Tyson will center beef production around Dakota City, Nebraska, Holcomb, Kansas, and Amarillo, Texas. They employ more than 2,000 workers in Joslin and can process 3,000 head daily. Pasco has capacity nearly 2,000 head per day. Again, restructuring follows mounting financial pressure. Tyson expects its beef segment to lose $500 to $650 million this fiscal year after cattle costs surged and quarterly beef volume fell nearly 16%. Tyson plans to restore a second shift at Amarillo as cattle become available. Diesel supplies remain tight, heading toward fall harvest, keeping fuel cost and availability important for farmers, truckers, and rural businesses. U.S. distillate inventories 12% below the five-year average for the week ending August 7th, even as refinery production increased. Distillate production averaged 5.3 million barrels per day, while inventories edged slightly lower. Gasoline inventory 6% below the five-year average. Propane supplies remain comfortable, at least comparatively. U.S. inflation has eased slightly in July, but energy costs remain a significant pressure point for ag and rural households. Consumer prices 3.4% higher than a year earlier. Core inflation, though, slowed to 2.5%. Food prices 3% higher year over year. Grocery prices up 2.7%, while meats, poultry, fish, and eggs increased just 1.9%. Dairy and related products 0.5% lower. China has imposed a 54.3% provisional anti-dumping deposit on U.S. pecans. It's creating another major obstacle for American growers seeking access to that Chinese market. Measure took effect August 11th following a preliminary ruling by China's Ministry of Commerce. USDA's Foreign Ag Service says new deposit pushes the total duty rate on U.S. pecans to 86.3% when combined with existing tariffs. China says U.S. and Mexican pecans have been sold below normal value, harming their domestic industry. And federal borrowing continues to accelerate, adding another challenge for farmers and rural businesses. Treasury reports federal deficit $1.8 trillion through July, borrowing from the public $1.7 trillion. For ag, sustained Treasury borrowing matters because government debt competes for capital across credit markets. Higher long-term rates can then filter into operating loans, equipment financing, mortgages, and other ag-related cost. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit TexasCorn.org and become a member today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
GLP-1s are quickly reshaping consumers' relationship with food. Although we're in the early stages of understanding this technology and its impacts, research suggests that effects could be significant. Some commodities could see benefits, while others may have to reposition.
Matt Wolf, analyst with Terrain.
I share two key takeaways for producers as they consider what weight loss drugs mean for their operation. One, account for GLP-1 consumption changes in long-term decisions. And two, continue to monitor consumer behavior as GLP-1 adoption evolves. Some of the most important changes that have occurred on the demand side of markets include trade and farm policy, demographic shifts, and health trends. GLP-1 drugs may need to be added to that list. What makes medications such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, Zepbound, and Foundayo noteworthy for agriculture is their effectiveness, growing use, and potential. A 2021 article in the medical journal JAMA discussed a clinical trial where overweight or obese adults who received GLP-1 medication alongside lifestyle interventions saw a 16% reduction in body weight after 68 weeks. By comparison, participants who received a placebo alongside lifestyle interventions saw only a 5.7% reduction. Whereas traditional dieters must try hard not to eat that extra slice of pizza, GLP-1 users seem to not have that pesky food noise to begin with. Effectiveness alone, however, would not make GLP-1s relevant to agriculture. It's the scale that also matters. Though global percentages are unknown, surveys suggest that somewhere between 12% and 18% of American adults have used a GLP-1 drug. Adoption is generally higher among women, higher income households, and older consumers. Some observers even suggest adoption has been widespread enough to contribute to recent declines in U.S. obesity rates. Adoption appears likely to grow. To date, cost has been a frequently cited hindrance to remaining on the medication. This may change as manufacturing expands, active ingredient costs decline, and patents expire in major markets. Eli Lilly CEO David Ricks summarized this dynamic when he stated, "In the GLP-1 category, we observe prices are elastic. The more we lower the price, the more users we get. That's the path we're on." As these medications become more affordable, they will likely become more accessible to a broader share of the global population. If a highly effective technology that changes what consumers put on their plates is becoming increasingly popular, the industry that produces that food needs to pay attention. Many food companies are already watching these medications closely and starting to reconsider or double down on existing strategies. Though research literature is still emerging, a growing body of surveys and transaction data have begun to paint a striking picture of how GLP-1 users differ from the rest of the population. While estimates vary across studies, the evidence generally points to two broad effects. Number one, a reduction in overall food consumption. Number two, a change in food choices. Producers should pay attention not only to new research, but also to the actions of major food companies and restaurant chains, which are among the first to feel the changing consumer preferences.
That's Matt Wolf with Terrain, and this is Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
Net farm income was $212,494. That's average net farm income for Kansas farms in the survey for 2025. That's more than double what it was for 2024.
Roger McCohen is a tax law specialist with Washburn University.
The government payments that go into that, plus the net crop insurance proceeds, accounted for about half of that $212,000. And so without those payments and proceeds, the average accrual net farm income would have been $107,000 in 2025 compared to $98,000 or $99,000 in 2024. So slightly up, but still up. But it's that safety net that, we think net farm income is going to be even higher this fall. And in fact, in my tax seminars for CPAs and attorneys, we're already planning tax strategies for dealing with higher income for farmers. And that includes Kansas farmers this fall as a result of those farm bill provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. So you've got pretty strong current ratios, 2025 2.70 down from 2.72. So it's basically stable from where it was in 2024. And the ratio of working capital to operating expenses plus interest was 97.5%. And that measure is approaching, but still below the 100% level that KFMA identifies as an important liquidity benchmark. And at the same time, the average farm in the survey had $4.51 million in assets, $871,000 in liabilities, and a debt-to-asset ratio of only 19.14%. So that's really good. So you've got a kind of a mixed picture with the data. The Kansas farms generally entered 2026 with substantial equity and reasonable liquidity, but financial conditions varied significantly among operations. So in 2025, about 28% of KFMA farms had net farm income of $50,000 or less, while the least profitable 25% had average net farm income of negative $31,000. So in other words, the statewide averages don't indicate a farm financial collapse, but they also should not be used to suggest that every Kansas farm is financially comfortable. So there's kind of a wide range, but you take it on the average, things are pretty good in Kansas agriculture. But given that wide range, you've got some ones that are really struggling.
And things haven't been looking good for wheat producers.
This is modern risk management is what crop insurance is. Revenue protection crop insurance is a contractual risk transfer mechanism. And so the producer buys coverage, pays a premium, gets an indemnity when the loss satisfies the terms of the policy. And that the level of protection that you get depends on the coverage amount that's elected. And so your approved yield and your applicable policy provisions are all tied into what your amount of protection is. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to be profitable, and an indemnity doesn't automatically make every farm financially whole. It's a risk management strategy that has economic value to it. So if you had a severe yield or revenue loss, that could be materially less damaging to your cash position when an insurance indemnity is available. And also for your lender, the difference between an uninsured production failure and an insured loss can be significant when they're evaluating repayment capacity and liquidity. So that strategy, I think, is preferable for waiting for a disaster and then asking Congress for ad hoc rescue package, which is kind of the realm we're in with the Congress right now. So I think crop insurance is pretty good. And then you got a whole bunch of provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Last year, the OBA, that as I've mentioned already, have really enhanced the farm safety net, plus the tax provisions that were in there.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
In previous publications, Terrain has projected the U.S. needed to rebuild the cow inventory by 2 to 2.5 million head. That would rebuild the cow herd and still leave 1 to 1.5 million head available fed slaughter capacity for when it's needed.
Don Close is a senior protein analyst with Terrain. Well, Tyson Foods on Thursday saying they're shrinking their beef processing network as historically tight cattle supplies continue to pressure packer margins. Company will close beef operations at Joslin, Illinois, Eagle Mountain, Utah, and will pursue a sale of its Pasco, Washington beef facility. They'll center beef production around Dakota City, Nebraska, Holcomb, Kansas, and Amarillo, Texas.
The scale of the Tyson announcement in late November created an abrupt shift in the balance of fed cattle supply to fed slaughter capacity, calling into question the need for sizable heifer retention.
Of course, this restructuring follows mounting financial pressure. Tyson expects its beef segment to lose $500 to $650 million this fiscal year after cattle costs surged and quarterly beef volume fell nearly 16%. Tyson plans to restore a second shift in Amarillo as cattle become available.
It becomes even more complicated as we turn to total cattle production and focus on what's happening on the dairy side as well. During the current cattle cycle, dairy cows peaked in 2018 at 9.4 million head, and beef cow numbers peaked in 2019 at 31.7 million head. This is the seventh and eighth year of cow liquidation, driven by poor economic returns to cow-calf and dairy producers over that period. We saw tremendous drought and economic stress, plus the development and acceptance of beef-on-dairy calves, which provided a much-needed feeder supply but tightened dairy replacements. Through the 7 to 8 years of liquidation, the average age of the cow herd has likely gotten older. With insufficient females being added to the mix, simply stated, the industry hasn't been putting replacement females back into the herd at the rate of liquidation and attrition. The cow herd is getting old and will apparently get older before heifer retention begins in earnest. I expect the attrition rate to accelerate as cows age out and become more vulnerable to injury and sickness. If the decline in fed slaughter capacity has balanced the need for sizable heifer retention, that poses a challenge. The threat of total cattle supply shrinking further could accelerate, making infrastructure contraction more likely. The risk of additional plant closings is a threat to the market, with negative packer margins expected to continue. Stabilizing and rebuilding the industry with a contracting infrastructure becomes a mega challenge.
So we ended up here by having a drought across a large portion of the western U.S. Throw in the fact that we saw higher prices for cattle, no incentive for producers to hold on and rebuild that herd. But now,
now comes an even bigger challenge. Rebalancing fed cattle numbers to our new slaughter capacity risk further erosion in the beef herd size. If packers need fewer cattle, feed yards will be closer to meeting the packer needs with existing supplies and will not need to buy as many feeder cattle from the cow-calf producers. That in turn disincentivizes cow-calf producers from expanding, and they hold on to the same aging cows.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Survey results from a study published in the August 2025 issue of Food Quality and Preference showed GLP-1 users reduced their caloric intake by 720 to 990 calories per day, a remarkably high reduction. Household spending data tell a similar story.
Dr. Matt Wolf is a specialty crop analyst with Terrain.
According to a 2024 paper by researchers at Cornell University, households with at least one GLP-1 user reduced grocery spending by 5.3% within 6 months, reducing their average annual grocery spend from $7,400 to $7,010. Higher income households experienced the largest declines. Beyond the first 6 months, dietary changes mostly persisted, though with some waning over time. Consumers who discontinued medication returned to pre-medication spending levels. Changes in food choices is the other half of the story. Survey evidence suggests nearly all food categories experience a large reduction in consumption, with a few exceptions. According to the 2025 Food Quality and Preference Study, more GLP-1 users increased their intake of fruit, leafy greens, and water than reduced it, while the opposite was true for processed foods, refined grains, alcohol, and most other categories. The results for meat consumption are mixed. Some surveys say more GLP-1 users decreased consumption, while others indicate meat intake remained unchanged. Transaction data point in the same direction, with spending declining across nearly every food category, according to the Cornell paper. Alternatively, spending on yogurt, nutrition bars, fresh fruit, and meat snacks all increased, but only yogurt was statistically significant. These changes extend beyond the grocery store, with spending on food away from home declining by 8% following GLP-1 adoption. A May 2026 article in the Wall Street Journal showed survey respondents similarly reported fewer visits to coffee shops, quick service restaurants, fast casual restaurants, and full service restaurants. Many also reported increasing their consumption of salads and bowls while cutting back on foods such as burgers, pizzas, and sandwiches. The existing research provides valuable insight into how GLP-1 users are changing their eating habits, but important questions remain. It is possible, for instance, that early adopters exhibit more dramatic behavioral changes than future users, or that some dietary changes weaken over time. Nevertheless, if adoption continues to expand, the initial evidence suggests the implications for food demand could be meaningful. The question for agriculture is how to prepare. As with many topics that affect agriculture, broad generalizations should be approached with caution. What makes sense for a grower of fresh produce and tree nuts in California may differ considerably from what makes sense for a cattle rancher in Colorado or a corn farmer in Iowa. Nevertheless, there are two broad takeaways that appear relevant to the entire agricultural community. Number one, account for GLP-1 consumption changes in long-term decisions. A consumer can change what they put in a grocery cart within days of starting a GLP-1, but agricultural production systems adjust slowly. Land use, processing facilities, distribution channels, and other forms of infrastructure take years to adapt. For producers, the challenge is not simply understanding where demand is today, but anticipating where it may be headed tomorrow. For some operations, the change in consumption for what they produce may be minimal. For others, it could be substantial. For industry groups, wider adoption of GLP-1s may also warrant a different or varied approach to marketing or branding our commodities. Number two, continue to monitor consumer behavior as GLP-1 adoption evolves. Our understanding of these medications and their consequences will continue to evolve. Assumptions made today may need to be revised as new information emerges.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
That is Antique Tractor Preservation Day, and now it is now called National Antique Tractor Preservation Day, and I'll give you a little backstory on that as well.
Michael Hinton is founder of Talking Tractors on why August 22nd is an important day.
When we lived in Missouri, I was trying to bring tourism to the state and to West Plains, Missouri. And so I contacted at that time Governor Jay Nixon and asked for a proclamation for Antique Tractor Preservation Day. And that proclamation led to not only a friendship with the governor, but also three consecutive years of proclamations, as well as involvement with the U.S. Post Office with a pictorial postmark. And so here in the past 2 years, running all with the exception of this year, I have held an antique tractor show at the United States Post Office in Hutchinson, Kansas. Again, had a pictorial postmark that actually we received requests from not only in the United States, but also internationally. And so I did that two consecutive years, and I've been very blessed. The governor of Kansas, she has provided to me, Laura Kelly, Governor Laura Kelly, has provided to me three straight years running a proclamation for Antique Tractor Preservation Day on August 22nd. And so the past 2 years, when I finished last year's show, they asked me what I was going to do for this year. And I said, you know, I can have tractor shows in Hutchinson, Kansas year after year, and that's great. People come to them. But I said, it's really not accomplishing the goals that I really want and have set forth for Antique Tractor Preservation Day. I want it to be a national event that people recognize and celebrate, not just in the state of Kansas, but in their own state. And so I began a journey of working with others in other states, and here recently, probably over 5 months ago, I got a call from a gentleman in a tractor club in Nebraska. Said, Michael, I've been hearing about your Antique Tractor Preservation Day. I'd like to get our governor to do a proclamation. And I said, yep. I said, I can help you with that. So I wrote the proclamation, submitted that to him, and then he submitted it on both our behalves to the governor. And here on July 7th, Governor Jim Pillen of Nebraska issued a proclamation for Antique Tractor Preservation Day. And it wasn't too far along after that. Actually, here on July 31st, Governor Mike Braun, the governor of Indiana, did the very same thing, issued a proclamation for Antique Tractor Preservation Day. And I'll even take a step back farther. Back in October 30th, 2025, the Illinois House of Representatives issued a resolution, H.R. 0423, and adopted Antique Tractor Preservation Day in Illinois, which coincided with my issuance of a similar resolution back in March of last year by the state of Kansas House of Representatives, and they too honored Antique Tractor Preservation Day. So this has become really a national event, and it continues to unfold with more and more states issuing proclamations and celebrating and honoring Antique Tractor Preservation throughout the United States.
Learn more online, talkingtractors.com. It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.